Giovesi. There was like, you know, it was pretty like, it's pretty subpar as a, you know, as a lot of like.
Well, just think about how your tastes in wine have changed. That you're like, that is subpar.
That's subpar. I'm not, yeah. I used to be like, yeah, Yellowtail or whatever.
Right? And now you can't go back and it sucks.
And it sucks. You're right. What did you do to me?
Sipping on town time while belting up Bordeaux. Pairing the best wine and picking the next show. Here Broadway guests end up acting like loons. This you can find here on Tennyson Tunes. When Ben Bradley cries, when the fight dies, whether June's or moon. I simply turn to my favorite thing, and they are a Tennyson Tunes.
Welcome to Tennyson Tunes. I'm Jessica.
I'm Jimmy. Hi, friends. Hi, moms.
Guys, we are doing this again from Skype because I am in Texas.
Living that professor life.
Right? I gave my second test yesterday.
Oh, do they hate you all?
They kind of do. They kind of hate me. But I will say that they seem to be more prepared for this one, which was really exciting. I think the first test kind of gave people a sense of how straightforward it's going to be. Yeah. And then this next test was about the 20s and 30s. But I'm just excited to get out of the 20s and 30s. I'm ready to get to the 40s. I'm ready to, like, get into some golden age musicals.
Right? Yeah. You kind of, like, have to do that stuff, like the beginnings and, like, operetta and blah, 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 blah. But it's not fun, you know?
Well, especially for people that don't, that aren't musical theater majors.
Yeah.
You're like, I want to go see a Broadway show. I don't want to know about all this stuff.
Right. I don't care about the Follies. I don't care.
Right.
I want to know about why they put an exclamation mark at the end of Oklahoma.
Right? Which we'll talk about.
We will talk.
How's your week, Jimmy?
It's been good. It's been fine. I've been following... falling down the, like, nerd hole more and more, because now I am, like, obsessed with D&D. I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons for the first time in my life, and it's the best.
It's like acting and nerdiness and everything combined.
Yeah, it's improv and rolling dice and being, like, I'm like this, like, 7-foot half-orc barbarian, you know, with a huge, like, hammer that I just, like,
So
it's like real life. And he his name's Kilowog, and he sounds like this, and he's like, let's get smoothies after.
Oh, I love that. I would love to see you play D&D, actually.
How is yours? How's yours week?
Oh, it's great. You know, living with my parents.
Yeah.
Awesome. But actually, the cool thing about coming back to Dallas is that I have not lived here in 10 years. And so I am exploring the city in a new way than I ever did growing up here.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, mostly because I'm able to drink. It helps a lot. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of similar to New York, what I would do in New York on the weekends and just, like, go out and try new restaurants or explore different neighborhoods or explore my neighborhood.
Right.
And I feel like I get to do that here still, which has been really, really fun.
That's fun. Do you have a car?
I do have a car. Ooh. Yeah. So I bought a car when I was going to grad school. I bought a new car. And for the past 3 years when I've been in New York, it was sitting in North Carolina.
Oh.
And we would just, like, turn it on here and there to, you know, make sure the battery didn't die. Yeah. And, of course, the battery died last week.
Of course. When you actually needed it.
Right. But it's been really great to have the car because I can go. I just tried this really fantastic restaurant. If there are any Dallas people listening, you need to go to Grassroots Kitchen in Oak Cliff, which is a neighborhood of Dallas that I never would have gone in growing up. It was kind of a sketchy neighborhood when I was growing up. And now it's, of course, gentrifying, of course, which has its pros and cons. But there's this really great restaurant there that does everything from scratch. They literally don't have a freezer. And
what?
So every day they make everything from scratch.
That's cool.
And it was some of the best food I have had in my entire life.
I bet. Oh, that sounds beautiful.
It was, and it was BYOB, and so we just like picked up a bottle of wine at my favorite wine store downtown, brought it, sat at this like table, I had some meatloaf. It was amazing.
Oh, had meatloaf, yes.
Right? Oh my gosh, best meatloaf of my life.
I'm going down there now just to.
Right?
To see.
We should have a visit. We need to have Zippy's Texas.
Yes. Oh, that sounds fun.
Right?
In a big 10-gallon hat.
Right?
And spurs, and I'm just like, walk and be like, hey, girls, let's get smoothies.
Well, I am very excited because I'm actually coming up to New York soon, so I get to see you live in the flesh.
That'll be great.
Very excited about that. And then, listeners, we have some really exciting news coming up.
Yeah.
Which we can't talk about right now.
Oh, no? Okay.
But keep listening because we are getting things finalized for some amazing guests and some amazing events coming up, and maybe where you could come and see us live.
Yay, another live show.
Maybe. So definitely keep listening because we will reveal more and more as time goes on.
Yes.
We'll give a little slow release.
A little teaser.
So, Jimmy, speaking of the 1920s and 30s, I was teaching last week, and I was – really honing in on Showboat because it's such an important show in musical theater. And I realized that we were not going to get a chance to talk about it because no one does Showboat.
No.
For many reasons. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that, but no
right.
one really performs it. Even in regional theater, it's not done very often, but I didn't want to miss out on getting to talk about this amazing show just because we didn't have a guest that did it.
Yeah.
So, we're going to talk about Showboat today.
Let's talk about Showboat. I'm
because
super excited.
It's the beginning to everything.
Right.
It
oh,
really
like,
is.
If, listeners, if you, I wish that you were here right now. Like, this is like her own classroom. Like, she's lighting up just because, like, lighting up. Like, it's the beginning of everything and just, like, sparkles in her eyes.
Honestly, I wish that somebody could animate me talking about musical theater because that's what I feel like it is.
Yeah.
I just turn into an animated character. So let's start with some wine.
Let's do it.
So today we're going to be tasting a wine from Tuscany.
Mm-hmm.
So the appellation is Toscana, because that's how you say it in Italian, Toscana.
Oh.
Oh, you know me and my Italian.
Yeah. Pronunciation, those things, right.
Ooh. Right. So this wine in particular is made by Bibi Gratz. So B-I-B-I and then G-R-A-E-T-Z. That's the winemaker. And it's 90% Sangiovese, 7% Cabernet, and 3% Merlot. So it's technically a red blend, but it's almost 100% Sangiovese.
Ooh. That sounds fine.
Which is really nice. Yeah. And just like Showboat is kind of the beginning of everything, I kind of like to think that Italian and French wines are kind of the beginning of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really popularized wine, and they were doing it before anybody else, and doing it well before anybody else.
Right. Ooh, yeah, I think, yeah, you think of wine, you think, like, I think before you even think Napa, you think, like, France and Italy.
Yeah, and Italy, right. So I'm going to go ahead and let's pour this.
All right.
I know you can't hear it, listeners, but it's glugging, and it's gorgeous.
It is beautiful.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That is pungent.
Ooh.
But like in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is seriously, like, I don't want to say an assault on the nose, but because it's like an assault in a good way. It honestly is super floral and a lot of that red fruit in there, but it's also having a lot of spices in it. It has a lot of that, like, mulberry spice.
Ooh, yeah, I usually see that in Sangiovese's. It's like,
Yeah. That's definitely really – it's a common characteristic. This also – I know it was done in clay soil.
Okay.
Kind of getting that in here, too. This particular wine, of course, is farmed organically because I love that.
Yes.
And they use a minimal amount of sulfites, which I also really like because I know that, like, I've been drinking with my mom and my family as I've been here. Mm. And the thing that I hear a lot from people is, well, I get a headache drinking red wine.
Okay.
And it's usually having to do with the sulfites. Is that people, like human beings, can have a very low tolerance for sulfites. Think of it kind of like an allergy.
Oh, okay.
And so by buying cheaper wines, you're usually drinking a higher amount of sulfites that they use for the preservation.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. But in this, they try to use the least amount of sulfites as possible. And so I think that when you get a wine like this, you're definitely in for a treat, and you're not going to have that headache, which is no fun.
That's so nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So this wine is called Casamata, by the way, Casamata. And it has a really, really gorgeous label.
Ooh.
It's
vibrant. There's like reds and oranges and yellows. It's almost it's almost an assault, too. In like a good way.
So this is actually a piece of artwork by the winemaker.
Whoa.
Right? So he was off, like before he got into winemaking, he was an artist, and he then saw that grapes were a way of making art in and of themselves.
Oh.
And so he started really concentrating on the wine and celebrating the wine and trying to make the best wine as possible. And then when he made his bottles, he put a different piece of artwork.
That's so cool.
It's really, really neat. And I think that is just a beautiful way of being an artist.
Yeah. Trying to a beautiful also like synergy. I think when we sort of think of synergy, we think of like it maybe like in a bad corporate way, but that's like a beautiful way to utilize both parts of your creative self.
Exactly. That intersection of art and then working with the land.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I love that.
And honestly, that's kind of like Showboat in that Oscar Hammerstein had been working with a bunch of other people, but this was really his first foray into directing and really what put him on the map as a lyricist and a book writer. And Jerome Kern was this already famous composer, but deciding in that moment to take on a serious subject matter was something that was completely different for these people. But it turned out to be super successful, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, let's taste. I got off track.
Okay. Don't talk about the show. Talk about the wine.
Oh, my gosh. I could go on about this wine all day long.
Mm.
Like, a little bit of sour cherry is what I'm getting right
okay,
in front.
Okay, yeah.
Sour cherry. Some plum.
Ooh. A little spice? A little spice?
Yeah, definitely spicy, especially on the finish. It has a super long finish, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can taste that.
Yeah. And it's pretty high in acidity. I mean, and in alcohol, honestly, it's a 12.5%.
Oh, my.
Which we don't really see a lot of wines past 13%. I mean, unless they're fortified wines.
Yeah.
So this is pretty high in alcohol and in acidity.
Friends, we are doing this at noon. So
yes, day drinking.
We are ready for the day.
This is why I only record on days. I don't have to pee.
Hi, kids. What are you doing?
Right? She'll be like, so Showboat. It's great, right?
Right? Okay. And you're like, you have your glass of wine in your hand still. And you're
sloshing.
Yeah, you're just sloshing. Yeah. Okay, so Jerome Kern. His last name sounds like kernels, like popcorn. Does anybody want popcorn? I'm hungry.
You'll get an A if you bring me some popcorn.
Popcorn. All right. Bye.
Oh, I wish. I would be the best teacher.
Best teacher. Your best teacher. Just instead of apples, just like pre-popped bags of popcorn for you. Just like, here you go.
Honestly, if these students know, they should be bringing me some wine.
That's good.
No, but I'm never going to tell them that because I feel like that's against some rule somewhere.
Absolutely against rules.
So I'm not saying it for my students that are listening. I'm not saying that.
It's like a secret. But,
wink, wink.
Wink, wink. Maybe I'll say it. It would be great if you brought her some wine.
Actually, my one of my honors classes, because they're going to help us with Tannins and Tunes coming up.
Yeah.
Going to hear from them a little bit. And I told them that they wanted to get familiar with the show to listen to it. So they said that they were going to have a Tannins and Tunes listening party.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, that is, like, are they going to have a drinking game?
I hope so. They can just take our drinking game from the Tonys and
have whatever. Fun with it. There we go. Anytime we say, like, finish or, you know, or I make a Marvel reference or something.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So let's talk about Showboat. Jimmy, I'm going to warn you right now. I get real nerdy about Showboat.
Uh-oh.
And I did a presentation in college. It was my first presentation ever in grad school.
Uh-huh.
And it was about Jerome Kern. And it was an hour and a half presentation.
Was it supposed to be an hour and a half? Okay.
Yes, it was required to be an hour and a half.
Okay, great. But
just imagine the amount of research that I put into that presentation. Your face right now.
And you know what?
Like, I don't know if I want to do this.
And what's funny is, in my mind, this you probably did more research than you needed to do. And all this, you know, it's like those people that, like, read books that aren't assigned to them, you know, in class, in school. That's what this feels like.
That's exactly what it was. Okay, well, you know some things about Showboat. You know that it was written by Jerome Kern.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you got it.
Am I getting quizzed right now? Am I getting tested?
No, not at all. I'm setting everybody up so that we're all on the same page.
We're all on the same page. Yes.
So lyrics are by Oscar Hammerstein, and the book was written by Oscar Hammerstein, except for one song. There was one song called Bill, which I think you know. Along came Bill.
Bill
was not the type at all. You'd meet him on the street and never notice him. His form and face, his manly grace, are not the kind that you would find in a statue, and I can't.
Yeah, exactly. And that was written by P.G. Wodehouse.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it was actually written for another show that he and Jerome Kern had worked on together.
Oh, I think I knew that. I thought.
And they just, like, fit it into Showboat.
Yeah, it's very different from the rest of the show.
Right? Well, and the producer of Showboat is really important because it was Florenz Ziegfeld.
What?
Yeah.
That. Of the Follies, the thing that we said nobody wants to listen about.
Yeah, of the Follies. And so imagine him going from beautiful women on stage and these star performers to Showboat that is none of that.
It's none of that. It's like a linear storytelling. It's the first, like, sort of, you know, linear storytelling. That's so interesting to me because, like, the Follies are just sort of just like acts. And
it's a variety show.
Yeah. And that's so, wow.
Yeah, and so for him to take the risk of saying, yeah, this is the type of thing that I'm going to put my money into and produce, but he didn't take that much of a risk because he really wanted to cut a lot of stuff from it. He wanted to cut, like, all the serious stuff.
He wanted to cut the show?
Yeah, he wanted to cut the show.
He wanted to the serious stuff? You mean the show?
Right. And Oscar Hammerstein was the one that was like, no, you're not cutting this.
Good. Good for him.
This is not going to happen. And also, imagine Oscar Hammerstein. We don't think of him as doing this, but he directed it.
That's so... I didn't know that. There's so much I'm learning.
He was the director of the original run of Showboat.
Wow.
But it was also back in the day where it was like musical staging.
Mm.
That's what they called directors, were musical stagers.
Oh, okay. He just like, here you go, here you go, here you go, sing.
Right? Yeah. Which I feel like there have been shows that I've worked on where I really just wanted to call the director a musical stager.
Oh, this is kind of a mean thing to say, but it's such a funny story. I was doing a production once. I won't say where. I won't say what the show is, so sort of like to leave the director some anonymity. But he was doing blocking, and he was doing here and here and here. And then my friend just started moving to a spot, and the director was like, "How did you know I was going to put you there?" And the guy literally is like, "It's in the script." The director was just doing whatever was in the script.
Yep. Yep. I have been told, oh, well, let's just watch the video.
Yep. I was just about to say that, too.
So, Showboat is... here's a quote about Showboat. That it says that it's perhaps one of the most successful and influential musicals ever written.
Right.
And I would agree with that.
I would
absolutely. And like you said, it shifted musical theater to focusing on furthering a storyline rather than selling individual songs.
Right. I think it was it was the first time that it was done where it was like the songs came out of the story.
The plot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was still like integration of the music into the story or into the action isn't what we think of as today. It still was very much, we are going to set up and now we sing a song. And then we go back to the story. So it's not what we think of today, but something like this had not been attempted before and been successful.
Was it something that was like on that scale too? Was it? It was huge. I mean, that's probably why Ziegfeld did it, because it's...
It was huge. Well, there were 100 performers.
That's too many performers.
Way too many. Think of the cost.
Think of the cost. And I'm just thinking of the backstage caddy drama with 100 people, all right?
Right.
Sometimes a cast of six, and you're just like, I'm going to strangle every single one of these people.
Mm-hmm.
100?
Yep. 100. Well, and it was the first musical that was successfully racially integrated.
I did not know. Ooh.
Yeah, so Shuffle Along, which had come out a couple years prior, was really influential in bringing black performers out of just performing minstrelsy.
Okay.
Because it was a musical written by an entirely black creative team. And it took influences from Harlem, and it was jazzy, and it had a little bit of a storyline, but not, it was still pretty light.
Wow.
But it was important for audiences to see black performers not performing minstrelsy, performing an actual show with actual love songs. And that was kind of a precursor to Showboat, because then when black performers weren't doing minstrel songs in Showboat, it made sense. People weren't thinking like, oh, well, that's weird.
They had already warmed up to it. They had already gotten used to it.
Exactly. Though the black chorus kind of was there to be a Greek chorus in Showboat.
Oh.
They commented on the story, whereas the white chorus members were fluffy. They did like the fantasy songs or like the lighter material.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, even let's just look at the beginning of the musical. So the whole thing, the first song of the show, starts out with an A minor triad, which I told you, I get really nerdy.
I love this.
So it starts out with this A minor triad, which putting the first note of your show in a minor key, yeah, like that's already saying we are starting off in a bad place.
Some shit's about to go down.
Exactly. And then the first word of the original 1927 production was the N-word. Like,
oh,
what?
God. Oh,
what?
God.
This is where we're starting? We're,
what?
And granted, that has changed over time because that is awful, and we aren't going to do that on Broadway.
Thank goodness. Little kids, little, like, youth theater, high school productions are not just shouting the N-word.
But it has changed to, in the 1950s and 60s, it started with colored people. Now it just starts with here we,
okay,
instead of the word.
But Hammerstein, again, what you doing, boo?
But this is where, this is us, or the creative team telling the audience, hey, this is not your typical 1920s review. This is not where we're going. We are doing something completely different.
Where are the girls? Where are the
right?
Girls?
Right?
Showboat. And it's going to be a boat full of girls, right?
Right? But it also juxtaposes the white chorus members and the black chorus members right away. It shows us the black chorus members are really the ones that are digging into the depth, that are the serious commentators, whereas the white chorus members are singing like, they're on Captain Andy's old cotton blossom, come on along.
That sounds right. That feels like I'd be right at home with that. Like, ooh, are we having a hoedown right now? This sounds great. Let's get smoothies after.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about was probably the most famous song from the show, which is Old Man River.
Old Man River, that old man river, he must know something, but don't say nothing, he just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along. He don't plan.
Okay, yes. I thought that,
right?
Yeah. I for half a second I thought it was Bill, but like Bill is probably like fancy and famous for like musical theater nerds, but like, yeah, Old Man River.
Bill is famous because every soprano has to sing it.
Every soprano has to sing it.
We all have sung it for our like jury or our competition. Like every girl has sung Bill.
Every girl sung Bill, and every girl has no idea what the song's about.
Right? And how really sad it is in the context of the show.
Yeah.
So when she sings Bill, she's auditioning for this woman who's been down on her luck for forever. Like her husband has left her. She's a single mom. She's auditioning for this nightclub that her friend works at to be able to do like a New Year's Eve gig. She's like, hey, I need a job for like a night. Can I make some money? She sings Bill, and her friend sees her singing it and is so overcome with emotion that she's like, I'm going to quit my job for New Year's Eve so that she can have my slot.
Oh, what a good friend.
Right?
I would never be that good of a friend.
I need some money.
I'm sorry. I got things to do. All right. That feels bad. I feel bad for you.
Right? So that's how Bill fits into the context of the piece. But Old Man River is really this time where Paul Robeson made it famous. He was like, they turned him into a big star with the song. It's who you think of in your brain when you hear Old Man River. Like, that's Paul Robeson. And the river becomes this constant theme of life and also about black oppression.
Yeah.
And not only is it used in the song Old Man River, but here's another really nerdy thing. We're going to go into Nerdland for another second.
Yes.
Anytime that they're talking about the river and they're using the river as a theme, there is a major fourth in the music.
What?
Yeah. So even you see it on Fish Gotta Swim and Birds Gotta Fly in Can't Help Loving That Man. That major fourth, because we're talking about the river, we're talking about life going on, right?
Oh, why?
Because fish have to swim and birds have to fly.
Why would it be a major fourth, though? Why would they?
Because that's the river theme.
It's just the theme. It's just we have set out, and they said it's like when Darth Vader comes out and they do the Imperial March. Bum,
exactly.
Bum, 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 bum. Great.
Exactly.
Love
and
it.
So Jerome Kern was doing that in the music with Old Man River, Old major fourth, and then Fish Gotta Swim, major fourth, and then the same thing on like Cotton Blossom, the same thing, same major fourth, because you're talking about the ship that's on the river.
Fish gotta swim, bum, 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 Old Man River, da, 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 da. That's how I'm going to think of it from now on. Now I want Darth Vader to sing Old Man River. Oh. Has he done that? He's not probably Darth Vader, but what's his bucket? James Earl Jones. Has he done that? There's probably a video of that.
Probably. Another thing that Oscar Hammerstein, you know, is known for If I Loved You from Carousel, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous musical theater number that everyone knows because it was really the first time that we saw scene into song into scene into song. In a first number.
Yeah.
We see Oscar Hammerstein dealing with this idea of the conditional ballad first here in Showboat.
Oh.
So the conditional ballad in Carousel being, if I loved you, words wouldn't come in an easy way, round in circles I go.
Right.
The same thing happens here with Make Believe. The song Make Believe, which is one of, I think it's the second or third song of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Which the two main lovers, one of them, the guy sees the girl on the showboat, falls in love with her at first sight, comes over and says, we should be together. She's like, well, I just met you. And he goes, well, pretend that we just met each other and pretend we fell in love.
Oh.
And then they sing Make Believe.
Oh, how creepy. I love it.
Very creepy.
What a creepy.
It's Oscar Hammerstein's first foray into this conditional ballad ends up working for him for every other show that he's ever done.
Right. And I think it's another sort of like staple of musical theater
Yes.
that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, definitely.
Conditional or like imagining or yeah. What would it be like?
Right.
Is it kind of like a romantic I want song?
Kind of, yes. Yeah. Also called conditional ballad. Yeah, that's the weird term for it.
I love it. I love it. And I'm going to get it wrong on the test, which we're
going to have. No. My students have already taken the test,
everybody,
so this isn't even going to help them.
Every single time that you download the podcast, you also get like a PDF file of the test.
Oh, I wish. Oh my gosh. Don't give me ideas.
If you can do it, good for you. You can figure that out.
Now, Jimmy, do you know what miscegenation means?
Nope.
Okay.
It's a word that you made up.
I did not make it up. It is when, back in this time period, in the late 1800s, when this musical is set, miscegenation is the idea that a black person and a white person cannot be married or be together.
Oh.
That it is literally illegal for a mixed race marriage.
I didn't know there was a term for that.
Well, and it's a scary term.
That's a terrible term.
Scary. And it's because it was illegal. And so that's one of the things at the core of this musical, too, is that you have a woman who is pretending to be white, even though her mother was black and her father was white.
Uh-huh.
But she looks white enough to, quote unquote, pass as white and falls in love with a white man. And somebody on the ship finds out and decides to get back at this guy by telling the police that there's this mixed race marriage on board.
Hammy boy, what you, Oscar, what you doing?
Well, but at the time, that was perfectly acceptable for a storyline.
Right, I guess, but he's not, this person who tells them is not the hero, you know?
No, not at all. And they end up kind of getting away with it because the police just say, okay, we're not going to put you in jail, but you have to lose your job.
That's so interesting. It's so interesting that all of these themes are, like, I guess they want to go as further from, like, the fun, like, follies. So they,
exactly,
let us make a drama.
And this was really one of the first dramas. I mean, even Pirates of Penzance wasn't this dramatic.
No.
Like, even operetta and the rest of what was popular in the 1920s were revues and variety shows and minstrel shows and vaudeville and burlesque. Like, those were fun for people at the time. That wasn't a drama. You didn't go to see a musical and see a drama and see a story and especially see racial prejudice and abandonment and alcoholism. Like, you didn't go for that.
No, I don't go for that now.
Right?
All right. I was just like, ugh, Mean Girls, this is a little too much for me.
let's stop with the bullying.
Yeah, okay.
Ugh. This is a lot of social commentary.
Mean Girls, the showboat of now.
but that's also it. It's like, I think that as a culture, sometimes we, as artists, we want to make a social commentary on what's going on, but I think that producers nowadays, if I was in Ziegfeld's position, I would be nervous to make a social stand about something. And so I completely understand where he was coming from, saying, hey guys, why don't we cut some of this downer material?
Let's
add some pretty women and some fun songs, and people will be leaving the theater happy go lucky. Okay. The other thing is that it doesn't necessarily end with a happy ending. No, it kind of does, but there's nothing that's resolved.
No. It just is. Okay.
It just is.
This is Ziegfeld. Okay, so yeah, I get that, like, it's about racial oppression, and it's about, like, the mixed race marriage, and so, yes, love it. But what if instead of having a black woman, we have a white woman, and it's a white woman trying to marry a white dude, and then everything's okay, and then girls just sprout out, like 1,700 girls sprout out. What if one woman is wearing a giant showboat on her head?
Exactly.
What would that? That'd be light. That'd be nice. Okay, here's the fine. Oscar Hammy Boy, everything that you want, you get into your show, okay? Great. You know, weird racial oppression, but then just a woman in a bikini with a giant showboat on her head.
Thank you, Florence Ziegfeld. Thank you.
Or do the hot, or she's just there, and then everybody does the show on the on the boat that's on her.
Uh-huh.
I should be a producer.
You should. I mean, you already have a production company.
Done.
So that's a little bit of a taste of Showboat, and it was super important to musical theater history, and we really get what we think of as the modern day musical from Showboat.
You're right.
Pretty incredible.
That's...
And unfortunately, Jerome Kern died shortly thereafter. he passed away a few years later, and so we didn't really get to see what he would have done working with Oscar Hammerstein more. Mm-hmm. But Oscar Hammerstein took what he learned and went on to work with Richard Rodgers and came up with all of the R&H shows.
Yeah. Now, yeah, what we think of as, like, a musical.
It's golden age, yeah.
Is, yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Rodgers and Hammerstein. Did we talk about the connection, though, between the wine and the musical?
Yeah, just that this wine comes from what I think of as the basis
as
of really great wine. And yeah. Also that balance between being an artist but also wanting to do something else and wanting to change things up and shake up what you've been doing,
which I
think is what Jerome Kern did and Oscar Hammerstein. And, of course, Lauren Ziegfeld.
Yeah. And yeah. It's also with each bottle of wine, you get a woman with an entire showboat on her head.
Yes, that too. Comes with a purchase.
And yeah. It comes with the purchase PDF version.
So,
now that we've got some wine in us, we're going to play games right now.
Okay, we have to figure out a better way of doing that.
Maybe one of us does it, and then the other one does it, and then we can, like, layer it?
Can we share it?
Yeah. Does that sound good?
Okay. Now that we've got some wine in us, we're gonna play games right now!
Now that we've got some wine in us, we're gonna play games right now!
Awesome. We'll layer that. Or not.
Just keep it. That actually might be fun if we double it. It's like you sing and then I sing and like or something like that.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
So our game today is shows that happen on ships.
Yay!
It's okay. It's gonna be great because basically what it is shows either that take place on ships or have, like, major scenes on ships. And I'm going to give you the year that it came out, and then I'm going to give you the one-sentence elevator pitch of the show.
Oh, okay.
And you tell me what show it is.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
It's Showboat. Is it Showboat? Is it Showboat? How about Showboat? Is it Showboat? Showboat?
We're going to start off easy. 1934. This story concerns madcap antics aboard an ocean liner bound from New York to London.
Is it Anything Goes?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yay. Okay, next one.
1997.
It is a stunning chamber musical, as massive as the ocean liner that shares its name. This musical tells the stories of people on board the legendary steamer and the men who got them there.
Titanic.
Yeah!
Yeah!
You're good at this one.
Thank you. For half a second when you were like, this chamber orchestra, I was like, are we talking about Phantom of Opera in that one moment where they're just like on a boat? I'm like, okay.
I thought about it. Okay, this one's really hard. This one's really, really hard.
Oh, okay.
1961. It's a Noel Coward show. And the story centers on a brash, bold American divorcee named Mimi Paragon, who's working as a hostess on a British cruise ship. This seems really hard.
This feels really hard, yeah. How to succeed in Showboat without really trying.
Very close. It's called, I drank some wine and now I'm joking. Great. It's called Sail Away. Sail Away.
Why does that sound so familiar?
It's a really fun show, but it doesn't have a lot of memorable songs. It has, like, two memorable songs.
Ah, okay.
Okay. This show came out in 1878, and it answers the question of who, among equals, is the most equal, but only when the men of the mismatched couples discover they were switched in their cradles as infants.
What are you doing to me?
Okay, it's a Gilbert and Sullivan show.
I think that, yeah.
But it's not Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah. Oh. It's HMS Pinafore.
Yes, it is!
Yeah! I did that show!
You're like, this sounds somewhat familiar.
It sounds familiar, yeah.
Okay, this was a 1966 off-Broadway show, but then it had a 2015 revival on Broadway. And it's a parody of the large, flashy 1930s Bessie Berkley-style movie musicals in which a chorus girl, newly arrived off a bus from the Midwest to New York City, steps into a role on Broadway and becomes a star.
What, it's like on the tip of my tongue. I know exactly what this show is.
Yes. What can you tell me about it?
It was Bernadette Peters' first role ever.
Yes.
And it has a stunning tap. Leslie Margarita was in the current revival.
Yes.
I saw it. It was amazing.
Uh-huh.
It's like Babe something. Dames at Sea.
Yes, that's it. Yay! You got there.
I got there. I was like, Babes in Arms? Nope. I love Dames at Sea.
Me too. Oh my gosh, that was one of my favorite shows I've ever done.
Yeah.
So much fun. Ugh. I also, the only way that I can get into like a Brooklyn accent is with my line from that show.
Do it now.
Which is, there she goes, the Lady Macbeth of 42nd Street. The only way.
That's
the only
good. Way. Sometimes when I like have to do things, like when I play this like dwarf and thing, I have to like, okay, like I have to like hiccup kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta,
exactly.
You gotta get into it. How do you get into it?
Okay, 2007. This show is based on the life and adventures of the 16th century Irish chieftain and pirate, Grain O'Malley, who was one of the last Irish clan leaders to resist the English conquest of Gaelic Ireland. It was written by Bouvier and Schoenberg, who wrote Les Mis and Miss Saigon.
2007?
Uh-huh. Starred Stephanie J. Block.
Or was it that Ice Queen thing?
You're so close. You were so close.
I'm so close, right?
You're so, yes, you have the last word right.
It's
something queen.
It's the something queen, right?
Yeah, so think of ships.
What? The pirate queen.
Yeah, that's it!
Yeah!
We got there. Okay, last one. This is another 1960s musical, and
okay.
It's a fictionalized account of the life of Margaret Brown, who survived the Titanic, and her wealthy miner husband.
Is it The Unsinkable Molly Brown?
Yep, that's it!
Yay! I don't know what that show's about, so that was cool. I was just like, the word's unsinkable is in it.
You're like, that's right.
I literally don't, yeah.
You did a really great job, though.
Yay!
Okay, Jimmy, where can our listeners find you?
They can find me at Twitter at Jimmy_Robertson and on Instagram at Jimmy Robertson.
And you can find me at JM Humphrey 1 on all of the things. And follow us at Tannins and Tunes on Instagram and Twitter. And email us at tannins and tunes@gmail.com. That's how we hear from you. And we also hear from you in reviews.
Ooh.
So get your reviews in so that we can donate $1 towards fire relief in Napa and Sonoma counties. And because that's a cause that's really, really dear to us. And keep listening for our next exciting news of where you can come see us.
I want to tell so badly.
No, we can't tell. We can't tell.
Why?
We can't tell.
I want to do it.
We can't tell because we need to get a date.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Oh. Well, thanks, Mom. Thanks,
thanks friends.
Friends.
This was so much
Hope
fun.
Learn something.
Yeah. Thank you.